Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Get It Off Your Breast, the podcast that digs into all the issues really getting under your skin.
With me, Emma Gannon.
And me, Leanna Bird.
So we're very excited that today's guest was Shafi Kosambi,
brilliant comedian who we're both huge fans of. And today with her, we will be talking about being content to be single, sharenting, and our obsession with celebrity breakups.
And we just want to say thank you so much for listening to our podcast, first of all. And also, if you can spare 2 seconds, please rate and review us on iTunes. We have a little challenge for you.
We thought, as the podcast is called Get It Off Your Breasts, we would see whether you can leave us a little cheeky review which manages to slip in a word for breasts without it being too overtly obvious. So Emma and I thought of some terrible examples. Go ahead, Emma.
Such as a melon's alive, this is great, or
jolly coconuts, this is a fantastic podcast. So you can do better than that, we're sure.
Be creative, and we have a little something for you. If you do leave a really great comment, we will get in touch with you, and there is a prize to be won.
Yeah, so we will be reading all the comments and picking out what our favourite is and sharing it and contacting you with a little prize.
So we hope you really enjoy this episode with Shafi, and here it is.
So Shafi, thank you so much for joining us today and Get It Off Your Breasts.
It's my pleasure.
We are so happy to have you.
We've all taken our clothes off.
Running around naked.
It's amazing.
Yeah, getting our breasts out.
Brilliant.
That's what we do. So we have invited you here, of course, to get something off your breasts,
yeah,
which are now free to the world. Okay. What would you like to talk about today?
Well, right, okay. So I would like to talk about the fact that I've had this epiphany. I've realised recently that I don't have to be in a relationship. Isn't that amazing? I don't have to. No one can make me. No one can make me. And I don't need to be. And when my daughter was born, I've got two children, and I was single, and my dad, and I was like obsessed with this guy, and I was all hormonal, and my dad said to me, but Shafi, you have your children now. It is time to have fun doing whatever you like. And basically my dad was saying, now you've got kids, why do you need the man? You know, their dads didn't stick around, why do you want to find some other bozo? But no, they're not bozos, and I've been out with incredible guys in the last couple of years, but I was at the Edinburgh Festival this year, and I made what's best described as a total mess with my love life. And I was walking along in Edinburgh, and I bumped into a lovely comic called David O'Doherty, and I said to him, and he bless his heart, he was having a little quiet moment on the ground, just sitting on the ground somewhere, as you do sometimes in Edinburgh. I was going to sit on the floor. And I went, David, I've just realised I'm 44. And I have never been comfortable in a relationship. They've always been dramatic and chaotic, and I've realised I no longer need to have them. It's been amazing.
Does this mean, though, that you're still having relationships, it's just that the label is not a thing anymore? You're still maybe dating, or is it
no,
that you're
I don't have time. I've always heard other people say, I don't have time, and I didn't have time, but I had them anyway. And so my time was crumpled, but it's the it's just another human being to deal with. My kids are small. My work is fun, and I work in the creative industry, so I kind of have to create it myself and do it myself and make things. And I also have a doll's house that I'm upcycling, and I haven't
very
given
important.
That
very
enough
important.
Time. I know. Children are not allowed near it. No, I just thought that I have been a crap girlfriend. I've been rubbish, actually. I haven't been a good one in the last couple of years with delightful people that have come into my life. And I've just finished reading Nick Hornby's How to Be Good. Now, it's published like years ago, but for some reason it slipped through my net of Nick Hornby books. And it sort of describes a marriage so brilliantly, where there are children. And they work really hard to keep it together. In a way, they work hard, but they do. And I realise that since I've broken up with both the fathers of my children, compromise is really hard.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that horrible realisation? It's really hard to compromise. So in order to spend time with you and nurture our relationship, that means I have to spend time away from either home or work, and I've done that too much.
Mm. So it's basically that humans have a finite amount of time and resource, and what you're saying is something's got to give sometimes.
Yeah, something's got to give, and before, my personal time gave. You know, I just never had a moment of a moment to sit and read, or a book that I wanted to, rather than a book for work. I'm always having to read things for work, and I can't just thought, oh, I'm just going to read this, or you know, I'm making light of it, but I do find upcycling really therapeutic. And you know, there's no time to upcycle because I had to sort of come out the jack in the box and go, hey, it's girlfriend time, I'm going to be happy girlfriend, and we're going to do exciting things. And I had a boyfriend who is still one of my dearest friends, and I went to see more live music with him than I ever have done, and we had so much fun, and at the end of it I was exhausted. And we're still friends, I hope, but I just want to see him happy with someone else.
So was it a moment of epiphany? Was there one thing that happened and you just sort of went, bing, a little light bulb moment, right, that's it, I actually don't want to be in a relationship anymore?
Yeah.
Or was it something that accumulated slowly over the years and you just came to this point naturally?
It was something that other people who cared about me told me. It's like, Shat, why don't you spend some time on your own? And I'd be like, but no, I like sex, I like the excitement, I like all that, and I want someone for me. And also, I have to be really honest here. Can I be honest rather than my usual lies?
Please do.
Right, so my little girl has never met her biological father, and I did feel an incredible disappointment that she didn't meet him. And I think that I felt almost like a duty to fill what I perceived as a gap. And I think my epiphany is realizing she has no gap.
Mm.
She's got me, and what she needs is a mum who is happy and present and, you know, everything else in our life is filled with people who love her. She's got a strong relationship with my ex-boyfriend. She's got a very strong relationship with my ex-husband, who's her brother's dad, with my brother, with my dad. Mm. She doesn't have that gap. And then I thought, I haven't been there enough. I haven't been mindful enough around them. There's a word I'm using a lot lately, mindful.
Mm. It's interesting because I feel like, I don't know if there's any full-on research or studies on this, but anecdotally, I always hear people, parents or mothers in particular, who feel so guilty about everything and they almost like have no time for themselves. And this idea that, you know, the whole like put your gas mask on before you put it on someone else.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people, I feel, don't do that, but I think we've been socially conditioned as women to not really give our time to others.
Yeah.
Sorry, to give too much time to others.
Mm. You're useless to other people if you're not taking care of yourself. You're useless, and that's something I've logically known but haven't properly put it into practice, sort of thinking that there's some kind of glory, some kind of martyrdom to being this like blue ass fly running around.
Mm.
But actually it's not productive, and it's time to just really sort of take stock, and realizing that a relationship with my ex now needs to be redefined.
Mm.
And I have this thing when people say a failed marriage. Why is it failed? You've had 10 wonderful years together. You've had 5 wonderful years together, 3 or 4 ones, you know. And I think perhaps this idea that one thing, one person is going to fulfill everything for you. Now, I've always said this. I've never said this to boyfriends, but I felt this. Like, I've never felt that, like, infidelity is the be-all, end-all. Fidelity is the be-all, end-all. Monogamy.
Mm.
I think there's far worse things you can do to somebody than get naked with somebody else. Mm. I think there's worse things you can do. And so I'm not saying that I've practiced that, but I just think that it's time to sort of take stock and go, what is
that is so interesting, because I think there's so many books and like TED Talks and things out at the moment about how monogamy is dead. And if you think back to like hundreds and thousands of centuries ago, we weren't meant to just be with one person. But I am definitely that person who's like, if my boyfriend cheated on me, I would be distraught.
But
so.
I think the whole way that we view relationships now, in a way, is naturally changing. And I think it was actually really refreshing what you said about what your dad said. Because when you start talking about him, I was expecting you to end that sentence by saying, and he was like, Shappy, you've got children, now you must find a good man to help. And actually it was the opposite. And that's really refreshing, because I do think, like, especially in our society still, and it's changing, but there is a tendency to view women, and for women to view themselves in relation to their significant others, whether that's I'm someone's wife, someone's girlfriend, someone's mother, someone's daughter. And I think we kind of, if we don't have that, we're made to feel a bit inadequate in a way, and there's a pressure. So I think you saying that, in a way, you've kind of gone, actually, I don't need to define I don't need that anymore.
Yeah.
I'm okay on my own.
Yeah, and I wasn't before. Yeah. I have to say, I wasn't before. I wanted that reassurance, but then I sort of, you know, I steer my own ship. You know, financially, I'm independent, and I raise my two children on my income. You know, like I don't have any contribution, and I am fine with that. I'm proud of that. Though I know that, you know. It's when my Middle Eastern side comes out, and I feel really awkward talking about money. But it is important. Financial independence is incredibly important to me, and always has been. And if there's one thing my parents instilled in me, particularly as a woman, I remember I went on a date with a boy when I was 15. It was like my first formal date, and my dad gave me money, and he said, "Whatever," it was Pizza Hut, you know. And my dad said, "Whatever happens, you pay for the dinner." Because
I love your parents.
Yeah. I want to meet your dad.
I think he took a bit too far, because I always went out with absolutely brassic men, like flipping out. But it is important, because it gives you choice. It gives you choices.
Can I ask you, Shappy, do you think that this is a temporary thing, that you will feel like this for a couple of years or for 10 years or however long, but if the right person comes along again, you're open to it? Or do you actually feel, this is it now, I am like taking my vow of celibacy, and I'm out the game, and
listen, mate, I never said I was celibate.
Yeah, well, like, that's true. Yeah. No, that's why I was going to ask
emotionally
you as well. Is it an emotional thing that you're just saying? Like, just don't get attached right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I think it's irresponsible. It has been irresponsible of me to allow incredibly lovely men to get attached to me, because I can't return it at the moment. But that's interesting, because with the future, because I don't know, nobody knows their future. What I do know is my outlook has changed, because I didn't, you know, when you look at your life and you see certain patterns that you have repeated, and my pattern has been gorgeous guy, funny, kind, pretty, I'm very shallow, decide I like you, I want to be with you, and I go, all right then, not assholes, not horrible people, but good people, so I'm not completely, I'm not complete melon, but never really considering other than fun and a laugh, what are they giving me, and pretty blue eyes, what are they giving me? I've never really considered that. I go, oh, well, they're good with the kids. Isn't that great? They're good with my kids. Or what are they like with me?
Do you think it helps, though, that it sounds like they're both really still very much attached to you? They're not going anywhere, really, it sounds like, because they're still, like,
a safety net.
In a way.
You're very, very, very smart.
Because if they both tomorrow were engaged to other people. I'm just saying, because I'm saying,
leave a gap.
It's nice to have people that that they sound really trusting and really lovely, and it's nice to not have the label and have them still there.
Are you saying, Emma, I keep men on ice?
Just on reserve, yeah.
There's nothing more feminist about this. I love it.
Perhaps you're right. Perhaps I am aware that they care about me very deeply. Perhaps I am aware of that. I am aware of that. It's not there's no perhaps about it. And I've been in this situation before when you decide that this can't be right, and then they do meet someone else, but I'm 100% sure, absolutely 100% sure, that if my ex-boyfriend said to me, I've met someone else, I'm so happy, I really, however much I'd have to go and have a little moment, I'd be really happy for him.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah. But I think there is a difference, isn't there, between being happy for someone and feeling the loss of them being there for you in a way that they can't necessarily be once they're in a relationship. I mean, I'm very close friends with my ex. We were together for 5 years, but, you know, and we're very good friends. I could pick up the phone to him right now if I had an issue and he'd be there for me. But our friendship and our relationship had to change when one of us got into a serious relationship, because they can't be that person anymore. That when you have that great thing happening that day or that terrible thing that happened that day, they're the one you speak to. That shifts. So now it's like, we'll now speak once every 6 months and we'll have a lovely conversation, or we'll meet up and it'll be great. But it's not quite as it was. There's a transitional time, so it does shift.
You redefine.
Yeah.
And that's all right. And that's kind of nail on the head as well. When little things happen in your day, that person you call, I've had to consciously go, I'm not calling you anymore. I'm going to call my friend and I'm going to call my brother. Mm. And this sounds really awful to just have this. I've rediscovered my mum. She's really cool. I tell her like silly little thing. She's like, honestly, I feel so guilty about this. But for ages now, my mum's just been this person that just, she's been like my wife. that's sexist. I'm like, hello darling, I just wanted to, mum, can you look after the kids today? I've got this thing now and you need to, I'm sending a cab over now, come and look after the kids. She'll turn out with her little bag full of, she'll go to the fridge and anything nice that she thinks she's got that I'd like to eat, she'll bring it over. And now I tell her silly little things about my day, and I told her that I broke up my boyfriend. She goes, well, I think you just always are happiest when you can choose your dramas. I was like, yeah. All right, mum. So yeah, they become. But my I don't know how much my ex-husband would thank me talking about him, but I will tell you about this. But my ex-husband and I broke up 8 years ago, and it was the toughest thing I've ever lived through, and it went on for years. The breakup went on for years, and it was the toughest thing I've ever been through. And we have a son. And he was with somebody for 6 or 7 years that situation was tricky. And then he broke up with that person and moved near to me. He moved down the end of my road, and our relationship changed. It was, I don't think it was any coincidence that it was 7 years after we broke up, that 7 year grief cycle had ended, and all of my upset and my anger and my bitterness had gone. And I said to my boy, the next woman that your daddy goes out with, I'm gonna love. And this year at the Edinburgh Festival, he introduced me to his brand new girlfriend, and I knew her. She's someone that I've worked, you know, known in the comedy industry. I was like, it's you, come to my arms. And we, you know, we went out drinking till like the early hours, and anyone that came up to her, she was she would bat them away and go, I'm sorry, I can't talk to you right now. I'm just having a natter with my new boyfriend's ex-wife. And we were just giggling and laughing, and he was kept that. Circling around me going, Shappy, don't mess this up for me. And, you know, and I saw them several times during the festival, and I cannot begin to tell you what a light that is in my life. And in order for that to happen, in a way, I needed to be single, because other boyfriends haven't always understood my need to be friends with my ex-husband or to make this other sort of very modern family. You know, I'll say, oh, I'm going to go out with him and his girlfriend, and my boyfriend would be like, why are we hanging out with your ex-husband? And I'm like,
Because it's another example of the labels thing holding you back. It's the modern family thing is such a nice way to put it.
You're like the anti-Dr. Foster, though. I don't know if you've been watching it, but no. I feel like you're the antithesis for that.
Oh, really?
You should. It's like the complete opposite of a relationship breakdown and where it just all goes so wrong and they just hate and it's revenge and it's just can't move forward. And yeah, so it's quite refreshing.
Oh, but I was there, though. I was there for 6 years.
Well, then you're the hope for the Dr. Fosters of the future. So 5 years on from where we are now in the series.
I mean, 2 years, it was so bad that my boyfriend communicated with my ex-husband, but now, like, you know, we could almost hug. We haven't yet.
You'll be all around the Christmas tree soon.
Yeah. Oh, no, we spent last Christmas Day together.
So I have a question for you.
Yes.
I think there's going to be a lot of women listening to this who feel like they would love to be able to have that moment that you've had and actually let themselves off the hook and be single and not need a relationship and not define themselves by it, but they will maybe struggle to for various reasons, whether it's pressures from society, whether it's financial reasons, whether it's just because they are addicted to love, you know, whatever the reasons. What would you say to those women who are serial daters perhaps, or jumping from relationship to relationship? How can they find that strength or that resolution, or, you know, or just, I mean, not obviously not all of them should do this, but if they are feeling like they want to and they're scared to have that, let themselves off that hook, what would you say to them?
Well, it depends. I mean, they could be in a relationship where they're terribly fond of the person they're with, but still feeling like they're on a clunk, stop, start cycle, which is never fun in the long run. It might give you an adrenaline rush, but it's not peaceful. It all depends on the circumstance, you know, like when I was first single after my husband and I broke up, I had to deal with being a single parent, and I felt so sad when I went to the park and I saw mums and dads and their kids, and I had to like train myself to go, you don't even know if that's the dad, that may be the stepdad, that may be the brother, that may be whatever. So all my life, because I'm really hectic, I'm hectic as a person, I leap from one topic to another, my thought, I can't remember the names of my closest friends when I talk about them, just scramble, scramble, scramble. And for years, people have told me to meditate. And so I tried to go to meditation classes, and I'd just be there, just going, oh, lady, hurry this up, I've got shit to do. She's taking up my time. But
I love that.
I felt exactly the same. Like, look at your watch, like, hurry up.
Come on. Would you just hurry up and make me feel calm?
Did you do that thing where you stop writing the emails you need to write in your head during the meditation? You're like, I can't wait to get out of here so I can write the emails. I used to do that as well.
I think that is massively a London thing. And living in the city, we're always telling ourselves, busy, busy, busy. Yeah. I'm busy, busy, busy. I remember my brother saying to me, Shap, Obama's busy, not you. This is when he was president of...
Good times.
So, okay, so at the Edinburgh Festival this year, my kids were in London for the first 5 days, and I had this weird experience where I was without my children or a partner for 5 days on my own in my flat because I needed to write my show. It wasn't fully written when I arrived, and I started listening to a couple of other female comedians turned me on to meditation. They said, oh, after gigs to wind down, what do you do? And I was like, oh, drink, because you've got all that adrenaline when you're on stage, and then you drink yourself, it's stupid, and then you go to bed. That I've done that for 20 years, right? And then someone told me about meditation, guided sleep meditation. Mm. And in Edinburgh, those first few days when I didn't have any bath times to do, I did that. I went to bed at 10 and I listened to guided sleep meditation. And it's a bit Alan Partridge, but oh my God, it worked. It really, really worked, actually meditating. And it feels like you've gone, you know those magic eye pictures that were really popular in the 90s? It feels like I've found that world. And I'm magically meeting other people who meditate. And they go, ah, here is where the peace is. And just having that 10 minutes before bedtime to slow your mind down without booze, without anything else, without mad exercise, because I'd go running. Yeah, I'll get like, you know, my show done, show finishes at 8, then I'm going to go for an hour's run, which is brilliant and worth it. But actually, my God, just sitting still and clearing your thoughts out suddenly made me finish with my boyfriend.
Do you know what I think is really interesting, though? On that note...
Yes. Have I talked too much?
Not at all. No, it's been brilliant. It's been really, really brilliant. You have talked quite a lot about your kids. Yeah. And this is partly why I wanted to bring this particular topic that I've been thinking about for a while up today, because Emma and I aren't parents yet. And it'd be really interesting to get a perspective of a parent on sharenting. Mm-hmm. Which, I don't know if you even know what sharenting is. It's one of those lovely words where you smush two words together, which is sharing and parenting, which is basically my mums and dads post tons of photos, or even just one photo, but they post photos of their kids, of their babies, on social media. Obviously, the kids have not given them consent, especially when they're babies. Some of these photos could be embarrassing, they could be nude, they could be doing silly things. And I read an article about it the other day, by a columnist, and he was talking about it and kind of defending it, and in it he mentioned that there had been a poll and that 56% of people in Britain who were polled said that they didn't agree with sharenting and they think it's wrong. So obviously it's kind of 44%, so it's kind of almost split half-half, think that it is okay. And I do think, and he mentioned in it that the main sort of objection that he finds, he gets, because he loves to post photos of his kids, is that people accuse them of being boring, you know, oversharing, who cares about your kids, like stop going on about your children, people without kids find it boring, blah blah blah. And he was kind of defending that, but actually I think there's something a lot more kind of significant there to think about, which is these, you know, the rights of these young people who will grow up and may end up being very introverted people who don't like having any kind of public persona and don't like sharing their life online, or they may end up being someone who is in the public eye, you know, a politician or a movie star, or someone who really doesn't want to have photos of them having their nappy changed, or, you know, naked in the bath with some of the kids. And I think we're going to start seeing, and I know it's happened in Austria, you mentioned before, Sheffield, yeah, actually, that you have heard of this case. There was an 18-year-old who sued her parents for posting embarrassing photos of her as a baby. But I think here in the UK and globally, we're going to start seeing that in the future. We're going to see kids growing up and suing their parents. And so I kind of wanted your perspective on it as a parent. You know, what do you think about it? Do you think it's fair play that they're your kids, and if you want to post about them, they have to lump it, you do enough for them, and, you know, why should they complain? Or do you think that, we should really think a bit more carefully about it?
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? First of all, Facebook is my way of connecting with my family all over the world who aren't physically here to watch my kids mm-hmm. grow. So I've got a Facebook group, and I share the kids' photos on there. I never... when I was pregnant with my boy, I wanted to get a 3D picture of him. And my dad said, why? Can't he just develop in the womb without someone thrusting a camera in his face? There's nothing sacred. There's nothing private. He's trying to grow a nose. He's trying to grow a chin. His heart's only half full.
Can we get your dad on this podcast at some point? I feel like we need to have him on. He's got such a great perspective on life.
Nothing sacred. And so I didn't. And I was very sort of adamant that I wouldn't have pictures of my children. But then what happens? Other people put pictures of your kids up. Well-meaning people. And you think, oh, am I going to go around and tell them not to? I mean, obviously nothing naked, nothing mm-hmm. embarrassing or anything, but I went on a program called Big Stars, Little Star with my son. And I
saw that.
Yeah, well, you know, I thought that'll go into his university fund. I thought, you know what, I've let him go on telly. So the odd snap on Facebook is okay. And my... you know, my daughter loves her, you know, loves the whole, oh, let's see what you've put on, and, like, you know, her grandma will write her a message and all that. But I do keep it to a tight group. I have everyone see, accept.
That's a good idea.
Because it's not public. And also there are some people who follow me on Facebook. They're literally comedians I've met once. And it's more like, why do you need to see my living room? You don't need to see my living room. I'll protect you from my living room. And then the first day of school, everyone, it's this new thing that everyone takes a photo of their kids at the front door first day of school. My son hates having his photo taken. So I said, it's Cass's first day. He wouldn't let me take a picture, but here's the front door anyway. I just posted a picture of our front door. It's a tricky one. And I posted a picture the other day of, and my brother took a photograph of me. What I feel sad about is we're losing the art of snapshots. Everything's a selfie. You can't tell anything from a selfie. I went on holiday and my brother took a photo of me while I was shouting at my kids.
in the checkout line. It's my favourite photo. My face is, I'm trying to be stern mummy. My boy's looking away and my daughter's sitting on the trolley. I can't see her, but she's got a hand over her mouth and she's pissing herself laughing because I've lost my temper.
Do you know Stuart?
I put that on Facebook. Bit of reality.
Do you know Stuart Lee does a really lovely bit about selfies in his last show that I saw, where he basically calls selfies something like a series of images of you standing in front of something that is infinitely more interesting than you
yes.
are.
Oh my god, yes. Sarah Pascoe does a line in her show about that as well, like you're obscuring something beautiful with your face. But I find it really interesting that I'm literally sat here feeling really old, and I'm only 28, because when I grew up, like, you would bring in a photo to school of you and your friend when you were little and be like, oh, how nice is this? But also, I got to invent myself online from the age of, like, 17 upwards. Got myself a blog, got myself Facebook. I'd already grown up. I'd already had a lot of, like, amazing times climbing trees and being out in nature and not on a phone. And I have, like, photo albums that no one needs to see. They're so private. And I just feel... It makes me sad that, like, my nephew, for example, loves the fact that I'm verified on Instagram. He's on Twitter. He's just like, oh, my God. And that's what freaks me out, is, like, kids feeling like their self-worth is going to be based on...
How many likes has that got?
Yeah.
Because it's not just sharenting, is it? It's actually, you know, kids and teenagers posting themselves. I mean, I don't know what the age now is to have an Instagram account or, you know.
I guess they lie anyway.
But you know, there's so much stuff from my youth that if there was photos, I've got these really, like you said, these photos of me as a teenager dressed up in like the most horrendous, like, corsets and leather trousers. I was like 13, I don't know what I was doing. But anyway, I just looked absolutely horrific with like massive hair and horrendous makeup and all these kinds of things. And you just think, I'm really glad that's not out there, you know, and I'm really glad I didn't have an Instagram to post it on. And I'm really glad that, you know, it's like when you read your diaries, I don't know if you've ever found a diary from when you're 13, they are the most cringy things in the world.
Yeah.
And you're like, thank God no one reads this stuff. If I had like a Twitter and like a public account,
I would have put it on there.
And I was blogging, like, oh my God, I'd be so mortified. So I suppose it's a wider thing.
Yeah.
But at least then you can only, you can grow up and wish you hadn't had it, but at least if it's you, you can't suit yourself and you can't be too angry with yourself. But it is a dangerous thing, I suppose. But if it's your parents doing it...
But you want to be your parents, don't you, when you're younger? Like, you're like, you know, mum's playing on this exciting thing. I want to play on it. Like, my parents didn't have phones or iPads when I was growing up because I would be in, like, computer room on, like, a big white desktop computer, like, playing games. And they'd be like, what are you doing? But what's weird now is people keep saying, oh, kids just come out of the womb and love phones, they love tech. And it's like, no, they don't. They love that you're on your phone. And they're like, what's that shiny thing? It's like car keys. Kids love car keys because you're always holding them.
Do you know what my son wrote two years ago, his Christmas list? It was just little things. And number six was for mummy to stay off her phone for a whole day. And at the end, he wrote a little asterisk on it, and he wrote, number six is the only one I really, really, really want.
Bless him.
Crack!
Yeah. Oh. It's interesting that gives me faith in the younger generation, that actually, because they can have it whenever they want, maybe they don't want it, actually, as much. Like, we're binging on it because we're still like, it's so shiny and new.
I think that, and also, just in my own defence, I have said to my son so many times, do you want mummy to go and work in an office for 6 hours a day, because that's the alternative. Yes. I don't work in an office, so while I'm with you guys, sometimes I've got to pick up my phone and email, and that might be at 2 p.m. When you've got, you know, in the summer holidays, that I've got to do emailing. The alternative is mummy gets an office and I'm not here.
Yeah.
So
because why do we still, like, have, well, this annoying stigma or judgment that someone on their phone means Candy Crush? Like, it's things like banking or shopping.
Yeah.
Or,
but I think the thing is, so I do that a lot. I work freelance in lots of different jobs, so I'm on my phone a lot. And I think the danger of that is, and I do know, you know, with my partner, etc., like, it can be frustrating because you're never off. So there is something, yes, an office, you know, job has its downsides as well, but when you finish, or you should finish. Mm-hmm. You know, you put your laptop down, you go home. But when you're constantly working on your phone, you feel you have to respond instantly, you know, it's WhatsApp now, and you're being rude if you don't, so you're never off. And I can get why it's frustrating for the person that's in the house with you, and, you know, there's never a moment when you're kind of like on
totally
on
present
free time.
That's a residue of growing up in a time and generation where a phone call took precedence over everything else that went on. If you were up a ladder and
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
When the phone went, it might be an emergency. Mm. And even though now we use our phones as the main medium of communication, in our minds, we're still thinking it's the most important thing. And that needs to change. And what I find interesting is people like my nanny. I have a nanny called William. I'm just showing off there. I'm so cosmopolitan. I have a male nanny.
A Manny.
Harry Poppins. He is 24. And he only has his... He only responds to his phone if he's with his... If he's with the kids. When he's got time off, he'll leave his phone at home and just go off with his mates. Mm. He has no interest in the constant staying in touch. Likewise, my friend Becky, who is 24 also, not interested in keeping contact because they're that generation where it's always been there. So they're like, well, no, because I'm doing this now. And I find that, oh, it's my generation that's like, click, 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 WhatsApp.
Yeah, we're all obsessed and addicted, aren't we? Because we did, maybe because we didn't have it. I didn't have it.
Maybe it's still novelty in a way to like not have to like go down to the bank and like do post a check. I don't know. Other people sound ancient. I still find that exciting that I can do everything from bed.
Can't believe that we don't have to actually move to speak to people. Can I ask, Happy, how old are your kids?
My son was 10 the other day and my daughter's 4.
So with your 10-year-old in particular, do you think that, just going back to the whole sharing thing, like would there be a moment where you might have a conversation with him and say, for example, I've got this really cool photo of you, I wanted to post it. Is that cool? Because I feel like there's also, it's not just with kids, but there's also like a whole way of posting photos now where we don't ask people for consent. And like, I'll go out and someone will post a photo and I'm like, I wish you could have asked me because I look terrible, which is obviously just a vanity thing. But other people might have other reasons for not wanting the world to know
also
where they are.
Also, I went to a wedding recently and they were like, please can no one post any photos till we do. And I thought, that's fair enough.
But I feel people kind of assume that it's okay to post where you are at every point, and you know, without asking. So do you think, is that something that you might, as your kids growing up, have a conversation and actually start asking him for his permission?
I know, I do already.
Oh, you do?
Oh, yeah. Because he doesn't like his photo being taken full stop. And then I'll go, oh, can I just take a nice one to put on Facebook for your aunt in Iran? And then he'll pose and he'll do one. That's good. But the other more awkward conversation I have with him is about, we're talking about, obviously I worry about, I don't worry, but I think about when he can Google whatever he wants to. And I already have had conversations with him about the internet and things that you can't unsee. And about, you know, and I will have really open and excruciating conversations with him about pornography, but I think you have to now. You have to sort of explain.
And violence as well, I think that's another thing. You can look at something really violent and it really affects you without you realising.
It brings you down without you realising, and addiction to looking at the same thing over and over again, and all of that. But yeah, I think it's really important to give them ownership of their own image. I know that there are some people who almost like to make internet characters for their children. I've seen that, you know, they'll have a Twitter account for their children, and that, for me, I wouldn't do that. That's not comfortable for me. I want our relationship to be here. You know, I'm gesturing like that anyone can see me, but I want my relationship with my family to be close to me. and not really let outside in.
Mm. It's really funny because my boyfriend doesn't let me post anything of him ever. Mm. Like he if I'm like, please, can I post this amazing selfie of us in Paris? Like, please. He quizzes me. He's like, why? Why do you want to share that picture? And I'm like, because we both look really cute. And he's like, no. Why does anyone want to see that? And I'm like, well, my thing is like, my friends follow me on Instagram and they actually do want to see pictures of us because they do, like, my mum and my dad want to see pictures.
But people are interested.
He's like, I'm just, you're like, why? He really doesn't get it.
People are interested in other people's relationships, and I think it's particularly, you know, you've got a blog, people buy into you, you know, your life, they care about you, so they probably would want to know. But I really get what
he
saying.
He doesn't want to be like plus one blogger boyfriend.
Well, I get that. I mean, my partner's the same. He won't post anything about us or anything about really his close family or anything like that. And, you know, at the beginning of our relationship, I was a bit like, you're just a bit embarrassed of me. You just don't want to post me in there.
Yeah,
and he was like, no. He was like, it's too special. I don't want to give it away to the world. He's like, I have so much of my life that belongs to the public. And that's fine. I have to, you know, that's part of what I do. But there's some things, you know, his parents, me, you know, certain relationships.
Some things are sacred.
Which are special. Yeah. And you don't want to share that with strangers necessarily or, you know, the public. Mm. And that I was like, oh, that's really nice, actually. Okay.
Yeah, because that's what you do. Yeah.
So that's what he says. Yeah. He's like, it's just for us. And I'm like, aw. Yeah. But still want to post it. We did it really nice.
You're like, oh, that's cute, but I'm posting it because I look great in it.
But you do... You are in danger of opening up a can of worms. Mm. If you decide to do that, then I never put pictures of my children up on Twitter. Mm. I think once I did, but I took it down really quickly just because that it was Syrian refugee kids when the when the decision was made not to let
accept any more kids under the dad scheme.
No, it wasn't that. It was when we decided to strike Syria.
Yeah.
I put pictures of my children up and I went, yours and mine. You know, like, there's no difference. I can't even talk about it. Honestly, get so hormonal, you can't even rein it. I just talk about children being hurt. Like,
the thing is, hormonal, I think that's natural.
I'm apologising for it. I just put pictures of them and I said, these are no different. The government of my country is bombing these children. They're no different to my children. And I put pictures of them up. And then I saw comments going, oh, you got such beautiful kids. And I just took it down. I was like, no, strangers in their pants looking at pictures of my children on the internet. Mm. I don't like that.
Well, talking about relationships and the internet, this segues into my finishing topic, which is the fact that people are so over-invested, I think, to a creepy amount in other people's relationships, but more in particular celebrity relationships. So yeah, recently Fergie and Josh Duhamel, don't know how to say his name, and Fergie from the Black Eyed Peas have split up. And then before that, quite recently again, Chris Pratt and Anna Faris broke up. And it reminded me of my friend who rang me in tears, crying down the phone, like I thought something really bad had happened. She was like, Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt have broken up and I don't know what to do. And honestly, I was baffled.
Wow.
People care about celebrity breakups. I put on Twitter actually recently that I didn't get it, and loads of comments were just like, oh, but you know, it's okay to care. I really care. They didn't re-elaborate. And I wanted to ask you guys really what you thought about it, because I do not give a crap about celebrity relationships. Like, I care about my own. I care about my family. I care about my friends. But I'm not going to cry if the Beckhams break up tomorrow.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Do you care if someone in the public eye dies? So would that upset you? Or do you really feel like, I don't know these people?
I'm not over Prince.
No, I definitely would. And I mean, I sometimes get really sad that Friends isn't on anymore. things end and that's very sad. And I think any person has nostalgia and they also think, oh my God, that person's not around anymore. Like, I watched Harry Potter again the other night and I was like, Alan Rickman. Really sad. So yes, I do.
So, but do you think that's in a way related? So you've invested in people and you've upset when they die, even though you've never met them, you don't know who they are, what they're really like, but it can affect you. Do you think that's a
connected in a way to people who, it's a different level obviously, but have that investment in someone's relationship and they feel like it's the death of a love that they believed in.
I do get that, but I think what I'm like that I don't like and that I think is like a total waste of time is, I guess it's people that really care and they like pick and they want to know why and they want to like really delve into the behind the scenes of the relationship, and I just think, why do you care about people you've never met? But also the media and how they, it's none of our business, is it?
No, they feast off it, don't they?
I don't know. I just find it interesting that like people genuinely have to like take the day off work because they're so
is
sad.
Your,
that,
is
like...
your friend still upset about your own brand?
You're really worried about this friend, aren't you?
I think she, to be honest, who knows? She could have been like, could have been the time of the month. I think it was just, she cared so much.
Wow.
Blew my mind.
It's blown
but
my
I think
mind.
A lot of people care.
So I'm going to admit, so I'm... When we first spoke about this, before we started recording, Emma, I was a bit like, yeah, I know, I think that's, it's a bit insane and I don't really understand that at all. And then I thought about it and was like, actually, there was a couple that split up that I didn't cry over. I certainly didn't call people crying, but I did feel a bit sad.
Ben and Angie.
Was not them.
People still
that
write
should have
long
been that one. Wish
them.
It was that one. Actually, I probably would care more about it if it was someone in a soap. Because, oh God, like Christina and Paul, anyone remembering Neighbours?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I sobbed. I literally sobbed for about a day. But anyway, but back to real life relationships. Helena Bonham Carter and Tim Burton, I felt quite saddened by. And obviously, I don't know them, so I had no reason to feel sad. But I think it was more what they represented and this kind of, I thought the way that they lived their life, you know, had a very alternative way of marriage that wasn't this cookie cutter, you know, 2.4 children, and they lived in this houses next door, and they were both quite eccentric and seemed to let each other have their careers and their lives, and it just, it was quite aspirational for me. Mm-hmm. And so for that to, well, I suppose it goes back to what you were saying earlier, Shappy, you shouldn't say for that to not work, because it did work for a very, very long time, and for whatever reason, which is none of our business, it's now moved on to something else, and they have, you know, they've got a different relationship now, I'm sure. But I suppose I was a little bit like, oh, because that was a really nice example of people doing it their way and it working.
Yeah. So you're projecting almost like your own faith in that thing.
Exactly.
But our producer, Shola, is really, you said that you really care about celebrity relationships. So let's just turn it on you for a minute.
Like, I get really sad when certain celebrities break up. And going to back to the death thing, when David Bowie died, I was absolutely distraught. And Captain Beefheart as well. Crying. But with celebrity, I think with celebrity relationships, because when I was growing up, I used to always get quite obsessed with musicians and like actors and actresses, and I think because they're put on such a pedestal that they have this expectation. It's almost weirdly like how the royals are treated, and when that diminishes and when that, you know, you kind of feel like, oh, is there hope for us? You know, if they can't do it, you know, because they're supposed to be perfect. That's how they're portrayed
in
the media.
What breakups really gutted you quickly?
Sienna Miller and Tom Sodridge, because I thought that they were going to make it forever.
So I think you just touched on something really important there, because I think that it's like the death of a dream. So we've all been brought up, and especially women, with a fairy tale story that, you know, from a very young age, you're read these, you know, I have issues with anyway, but you know, the princess and the prince are going to end up together, which feeds back also into what you were saying about
happy,
you know, needing a relationship and all the rest of it. And I think when you see two people that you really love in the public eye, and you feel like, oh my God, they're the perfect couple, they're amazing, it's like it validates this childhood fairy tale dream that you can live happily ever after. And when that breaks up, it's like, what if there is no true love? If they can't make it, what hope do we have? Mm. And so I think it's, you know, we're all narcissists at the core. And I think, like, sad as we may be for them, we're not really, we're sad for us. And we're sad of the dream and the hope and the aspiration that we had to one day have a relationship like theirs. Even though the reality is, they could have had a shitty relationship, we don't know. But the way it looked to the world was shiny and plastic and lovely and happy and, you know, perfect.
Yeah, it is interesting that when you do click on the link that's like, you know, X and X have broken up and this is why. And it is interesting that a lot of these high profile shiny celebrities, who I personally don't look up to celebrities, like I don't really find them that impressive, like the big Hollywood stars. I'm like, what makes you better than everyone else? Like, we've all got problems. And I think a lot of it is like our work schedules, and we were traveling too much and we were too busy. And that is interesting, because I just think that's quite sad, really. Like, we put these people on a pedestal, but they have problems like everyone else. So in
but that, that's the pat reason, isn't it? They never say us because he made a really weird noise when we were making love, and I just couldn't get past that.
In a way, the only positive I think of like those horrible clickbait headlines and the celebrity gossip is like it does shine a torch on everyone has problems, everyone has relationship breakups. If we can learn from each other, that's great, but let's not think people are perfect and then like shun them for not being perfect.
I do think there's a danger though with the, you know, the way that what you were saying, Shappy, of the way that the, well, the media and the public feast on the details of the breakup. I do think that there's something quite cruel about that actually, because, you know, we've all been through breakups and some of them can be really tough and really some of the most challenging times in your life. And I think to have it kind of poured over in the media and very much, you know, team this person, team that person, and, you know, often your side of the story or the truth about what's really happening will never come out and should never come out. But, you know, to watch people kind of make up stuff or twist the truth or call you the villain, no matter what happened, it really isn't our business and no one knows what the relationship is like. And, you know, you were talking about fidelity and monogamy being the be-all and end-all in some people's eyes. And it's like, well, yeah, maybe one person did cheat, but maybe there was a whole host of years leading up to this and we don't know anything about it and we shouldn't. And I just can't imagine anything worse in a way than going through a really incredibly public breakup and having and being heartbroken and having
and
everyone judge
photos
you.
Photos of you depressed
and,
in your car.
And judging you and deciding that this is why the breakup, because you were this and you did that and it's your fault. And I just think it's really cruel, actually.
And everyone knows what nonsense it is, unless they're really thick. Everyone knows what nonsense it is. But everyone knows that the journalists writing that will know it's shit and hating themselves for having to eke a living out of this crap. Everyone knows it's bollocks. So I imagine you'd have to find a way, if you were that Hollywood star, to block it out. How much did everyone laugh at Gwyneth Paltrow and that other bloke? I can't remember.
Chris Martin.
I told you I can't remember my best friend's name.
Oh, conscious uncoupling.
Yeah, that conscious uncoupling. I so relate to that now. I relate. I thought, oh, what hippie shit is this? But I really get it. It's like the respect is there, the friendship perhaps is there, and it can be built on.
Yeah,
but this isn't, not everyone that breaks up then hates each other. And you have to remember this. Well, yeah, you have to remember that this is a person you chose to be with and choose paint, wall colour with, and perhaps have kids with. You can't suddenly then go on a hate thing. We'll go out and we'll slag off our exes. No, I don't want to slag off my exes. They were really good people. And that's a sort of juvenile.
I love that. That's just such a good message, isn't it? Because why would you throw everything away?
There's this comedian who I shan't name. Always did stuff about what horror show his ex-girlfriends are. And I sit there and go, mate, will you just go out with people you like?
Don't a lot of comedians really like feast on like my ex this and my ex that?
I think perhaps they do when they're in pain. But I saw a comic recently do material about his divorce and he did it with such self-awareness of where he is. And you didn't see his ex that he was talking about as a dickhead. You saw it as a real... two complex human beings who'd been together for this amount of time and now they were clunking along together rather than rolling along together. And you saw that and he did it with self-awareness and it was perfect. Like I'm going to say Dan Antopolsky, it was such a brilliant show. You never felt that anyone was being slagged off. You got the complexity of human relationships. And that's what Nick Hornby does as well. I keep going on about Nick Hornby because I've rediscovered him really recently. Anyway.
I feel like that kind of almost loops back again into what we were talking about with the sharing thing, because if you're going to do like a comedy show and talk about your breakup, again, like, do you need consent from that person? And it opens up that whole...
There was one at Edinburgh that I saw and he kept calling her like the name and then for legal reasons.
That's brilliant.
That was quite funny because it was like, but yeah, just to end, I just wanted to ask one quick question. So with the celebrity breakup thing, because I know people listening will probably think this, do you think that because they have high earning jobs and they're in the public eye that actually they are like open to scrutiny? Do you think that it's part of the job? Because I personally don't. I think celebrities or actors or actresses or whoever work quite hard actually, and we shouldn't just like rip them apart.
What would you say when that celebrity has earned their millions by purely selling what they've chosen and purely selling their life, their relationship, their children's images. Mm-hmm. And how do you then draw the line?
Well, that's interesting because that Katie Price had a breakup recently and her...
They broken up?
Mm. Yeah.
This is what I was going
to say. That's the one that broke me. So I think it depends because she's owning it and she's using Loose Women as a platform to talk about it. Mm. I guess I'm just... I don't know why. I've never really been that person that's like preaching to protect celebrities. Like, I don't know where this has come from. I think it's just that they're making something creative. They're spending like hours and hours and hours on film sets. Why do they deserve to have their personal lives picked apart? Well, I think
you just nailed it with what there's a difference between people who are famous as a byproduct of their talent and what they do, and they have a job. So you do comedy, that's your job, you know, because you become famous as a byproduct of that. You didn't set out and go, I want to be
a famous person.
Well, maybe you did, but who knows?
So basically, but, if Kim Kardashian and Kanye West, but if you're, it's sort of like,
if you're a reality TV star or someone who makes, you know, it's now a job to be a celebrity without any sort of other so-called, you know, talent. I mean, you have obviously a talent for being a reality star and a business person and all the rest of it. But I do think there's a difference, and I think a lot of people are incredibly talented and they're sharing their talents with the world, and yes, they're getting paid handsomely for it, but they don't necessarily, you know, they shouldn't have their lives scrutinised in that way. And I think if you are someone who, like you said, has made your money out of, you know, your personal life, your kids, your husband's, your affairs, all the rest of it being in the public sphere, you then can't complain when it is.
Yeah.
So again, you have to be maybe a bit smart. You know, and you'll know this better than I, Sheppy. You're in the public eye, so you have to be a bit smart about the choices you make of how much you do decide to share publicly, how much you keep to yourself as a personal. And once you cross the line, I guess it's kind of hard to go back on that.
It certainly is, but I'm not in that category. I don't think there's an interest in me the way there is in Katie Price or whatever. But it's an interesting thing, and then you. You cannot read those things. You can't opt out of it.
I love why, like, when I click the link, it's like,
yeah, I know.
Well, you're still click really the link, reading it.
And the man with the gun to my head saying, come on, who are the ugliest celebrities of 2017? I am, who's hot but goes out with someone ugly? I came across that one the other day. Wow. What kind of animal sets up that? And what kind of worse animal looks at it? Me.
Well, I think those three topics just like totally interweaved and almost complemented each other.
Absolutely.
Shappy, thank you so much.
I'm now going to go away in my usual panic of, oh God, I shared too much, I talked too much, did I swear?
I shouldn't have got my breasts out at the beginning of the podcast.
Also, on meeting Shappy downstairs before recording, I did compliment you on your amazing book.
Oh,
Nina is not okay. Just thought we'd give that a little shout out.
Nina's not okay.
Out on paperback now too?
It's out on paperback, yeah.
And if people do want to hear more from you, is there other ways? So you've got Twitter, obviously, they can start.
Yeah, I've got a website, shabby.co.uk. And also, right, I've set up a Facebook page. I've never had one before. It's called Shabby Corsandy's Cafe. I don't know what to put on it. And I haven't got that many people like...
You can put this podcast on it.
Yeah,
there you go.
I haven't got that many people following me on it. I think I ought to do that. But I live on Twitter. I live on it. Where to find
them. Amazing. Thank you for coming on our very honest, unfiltered, very friendly and conversational podcast.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.